We were up there for about 10 days. First, we went to Oslo, Norway, which is one of the biggest cities in Norway. We learned about, you know, the city, and then they took us on a charter flight up to Svalbard, which is about 400, 500 miles north of Norway. It's a region of Norway, and it's in the Arctic Circle. And at that point, we got onto the National Geographic Explorer, one of the expedition ships for National Geographic and Lindblad expeditions. And at that point, we started to kind of cruise around Arctic Svalbard, mainly the southern parts, because the ice in the north was still melting. But it was kind of nice because we got to go on land a lot, see a lot of different wildlife like the polar bear and the walrus. And then we just came back to Longyearbyen, which is the capital of Svalbard, and got to learn more about that region and what supports their region, like tourism and scientific research on climate change. It was an amazing experience, and I learned a lot, met a lot of really awesome people, and really got to see climate change up close.
And as a sixth grade science teacher, what did you really learn from this experience?
I learned that I still don't know a lot about the world that I thought I did. Before this trip, I knew about the Arctic. I knew about climate change happening up there, but I didn't know about Svalbard. I didn't know that was an area. I didn't know that that climate change was having such a drastic impact on them. So I think that I learned that I need to make sure that my students and even myself are more aware of geology and geography of this world and where things are and how things are impacted, and the wildlife that lives there. So just being more geographically aware of the world, I think, is the number one thing I brought back, because even just standing on Svalbard and looking around and realizing how it was so much like a different world than I was used to here in the United States really opened my eyes.
Tell me about some of the specific examples of climate change that you saw out there that were the most striking to you.
Definitely the ice. I took a lot of pictures of ice. It's fascinating, all the different types. But seeing how little there was and how thin there was, if there was any, that the ship was very easily able to just break through it. And talking to the captain and hearing his stories, and he's been on this ship for 50 some years, and he's telling us about how he's been able to go more north than he's ever been able to because the ice is so thin. So hearing that firsthand and seeing that outside my porthole window was just, you know, very, very interesting to me. And then seeing that there are polar bears on land, like we didn't get a chance to land a lot of times because the polar bears were on the land, on the islands. And at this time of the year, they really shouldn't be. They should be out on the ice. So a lot of stranded polar bears, and if they're stranded, that means they're hungry. So we weren't allowed to go on the land at that point. So just kind of seeing that, like I said, firsthand, and really hearing the stories, I think the stories of the people that live there were the most impactful, definitely.
And tell me about one of those stories that you heard.
There was a story about there's a polar bear and two cubs, and the female polar bear, she was going into the human dwellings, so like the research facilities in Svalbard and the town of Longyearbyen, and kind of scavenging, looking for food. And they, you know, their assumption was that maybe she didn't get out into the ice in time to find the seals, which is the normal diet of a polar bear. So she was in the human dwellings instead. And so, of course, that's a safety hazard. So they had to airlift her out and her two cubs to a different part of Svalbard. And it's an archipelago, so it's different islands. So they put her on a completely different island. And then a few weeks later, she was back at the same place. So she must have traveled across the ice, or there must have been a way, you know, to get there again. And she was doing the exact same thing. And, you know, a couple more times, they put her farther and farther away, and she kept coming back. So this shows that, you know, not only are polar bears, you know, they're intelligent and they're, you know, they're adaptable, but she was trying to make do with not having food because of the lack of ice.
How exactly do you teach climate change in the classroom?
I'm very cautious about it because I know it's a very touchy subject. A lot of people, especially from around here, can have different views about it. And students, you know, obviously hear from their parents and the media about climate change a lot. So I didn't want to just preach to them and tell them this is what I believe, so you should believe it. Because I know I've had that as a student before. And, you know, you just resent the teacher at that point. So I really wanted to just present the facts to them and make it very science-based and not political based or whatnot, and have the kids do the research, like, okay, what is weather, what is climate, what's the difference between weather and climate? Just because it's cold one day and warm the next day doesn't mean that's climate change necessarily. So having them come to their own conclusions, doing the research, understanding what greenhouse gases are, what carbon dioxide is, the impact of carbon dioxide, where carbon dioxide is going, what's that doing, the cause and effect of everything, and then seeing them kind of understand, oh, I kind of get this now. This is really intriguing to me. And I know at the end I asked the kids, okay, what did you learn, or what resonated with you? And they were just like, well, the fact that it's so relatable, like this is something that's going on right now. And, you know, 2 months, 3 months later, they were still asking me questions. And I think that was honestly because they were the ones kind of drawing their own conclusions with my help with, you know, the science part behind it.
So I'm wondering, you know, since you brought up that there were questions, what kind of questions did your students ask?
Well, the biggest one obviously is, are we going to die? What's going to happen to me? Or is it going to be a massive flood? I got the whole Day After Tomorrow movie. Is that what's going to happen? Like, is that, you know, is it going to be that drastic? So there was a lot of like personal, am I going to be okay questions, I think was the biggest thing. And then I got the, okay, what about the animals? What about my home? And then from that drew them into the, what can we do? Like, how can we help? How can I help at home? Can I, you know, carpool with my friend one day and not use that fuel? Can I, when I get older, maybe, you know, purchase an electric car or, you know, hybrid or something like that? Like, what can I do? So once they realized that this was something that was, you know, going to impact them, whether it was in the next 10 years or, you know, to their children's, you know, generation, it was definitely something that they were concerned about for sure. But I got a lot of questions like that for sure.
In terms of feedback from parents, do you ever run into students who are saying, oh, my parents don't believe in climate change, how do I communicate this with them?
I did get a lot of students telling me that they do talk about it at home with their parents and they have heard about it from their parents, but I didn't get a lot of the students saying, oh, my parents strongly believe in this, so I don't want to talk about it or I don't want to learn about it. It was a very supportive community, and I think honestly that the school community that I have is very much like that. A lot of the parents are very forward-thinking and they're very proactive and supportive of learning, whether or not they agree with the teacher or not. They're supportive of their student learning different points of views. So I think that really helped, was that my school was very open to the idea. I'm sure the students went home and talked about it with their parents, but I didn't get any parent backlash or negativity. If anything, I got parents saying, I appreciate that you've had this conversation with them. It started a really good conversation at home with our siblings, and we're, you know, grateful that we can talk with them about it and that they're open to talk about it. So no negativity per se, just more gratefulness that, you know, they can actually discuss it, because it is a topic that schools kind of somewhat are afraid of talking about.
Right, and you're introducing this topic into the school for the first time, is that right?
That is right. So in Delaware, the old Delaware science standards don't have it at all. It's very much, okay, what has happened in the past of Earth's history, or, you know, geology and, you know, all that stuff. They don't get into the environmental or, you know, what's going to happen to our Earth. So the new science standard, next generation science standards, do have that a little bit with the human impact on the environment part of the standards. So as an NGSS leader this year, I was piloting a new unit, and in that unit it had these standards, so I really wanted to introduce that and kind of get that rolling, especially into the next year, so it's already been established.